Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and as promised, we have live music today from our Buck studio in the form of harpist Chloe Tula, who is one of the Final Forte winners for 2013.
Hi.
Pleasure to have you here, yes. And
thank you.
The first thing I see as I look at you, of course, is between us is a harp, a large harp. This is not, you know, the sort of thing you tuck under your arm. How often do you get to play your own? Do you have to play your own harp, or do symphony orchestras, when you perform, provide one?
Well, this is my own harp, and it is my traveling harp, my performing harp, my everything harp. But some symphony orchestras do actually provide harps to their harpists, but it's considered lucky if you land a job like that.
So this might be called, let's see, the largest instrument you can play and still have it be inconvenient enough to lug around. I mean, if you were a pianist, you wouldn't really have this issue.
Correct.
And even a double bassist, it wouldn't be quite so cumbersome as taking this around. You came to the harp because you heard somebody playing it when you were 9 years old?
Mm-hmm. I was 9 years old, and I went to, as dorky as this sounds, a fairy festival at a local farm where I lived at the time. And there was this harpist there, and she was absolutely incredible. She was probably my age now, 17, and I just really fell in love with the instrument. It seemed so magical to me.
But you're a pianist, too. Were you already studying the piano at that point?
I'd been studying the piano for 4 years at that point.
But of course.
Yeah. And I looked at the harp, and I asked her if I could try it, and she said yes, which I was actually very lucky that she let me try her harp. But I looked at it, and I thought it was a piano turned inside out. You know, if you take a grand piano and take out the strings.
Were you inclined as a pianist, a young pianist, to reach in there and play the strings?
Not quite as I would at a piano, but she sort of showed me the form of grasping the strings and plucking them, and I was able to pluck out Ode to Joy. So
just by ear, that must have impressed everybody for the first time around handling the instrument.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive, and I guess I didn't realize that it was impressive at the time, but I asked my mother for harp lessons for my 10th birthday.
You know, I have to say it looks like a kind of an unwieldy instrument to play, to be able to reach in there, and you're playing the strings from both sides, mm-hmm. and you also have pedal action there, which changes the pitch of the strings?
Correct. There are 7 pedals along the base of this instrument, 3 on the left side and 4 on the right side. And each of them corresponds with a certain note on the string. So there's a C pedal that changes all the different Cs on the harp at once. So if you don't mind, if I could play, right now I have the pedal in its up position. So all the Cs are flats, making it be natural to the ear. And if I were to push the pedal down one notch, it would be C natural, and then C sharp. So each of the strings have 3 functions, in essence.
And the 7 pedals are what, depending upon which group of strings?
Yes, that's exactly right. There's a D, C, B, and then E, F, G, A pedal. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot to keep up with.
Yeah, it's a little bit more difficult than driving a car, I would say.
Well, so then how many strings? I mean, it's pretty well regulated, right? I mean, for
right.
a standard concert harp.
Mm-hmm. This is a full-size harp, so it has 47 strings.
47, and is there any particular reason for that number? It seems a little arbitrary.
It is very arbitrary. I think the harp, in my opinion, is still in its development, and this is where it's at right now, you know, the size that's manageable for the average harpist and still covers a broad range.
Well, you're sort of fortunate in a way in that you've had harp repertory all along. Now, maybe for somewhat different kinds of harps mm-hmm. than what you play in some cases, but it's not as if you were playing, you know, say a brass instrument where you don't really have a long history of things written specifically for, you know, mm-hmm. for an instrument because it hadn't been developed until
right.
fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
So how far back do you go with your harp repertory?
Well, I mean, it is kind of the baby of the orchestra. The repertoire really extends only until the mid-19th century.
Really?
So really the romantic period was when the harp started being put into salons, and people thought it sounded really pretty, and were writing all these really difficult pieces for it, and then it sort of regressed into a more contemporary feel. But regardless, there are a lot of Baroque and classical pieces that have been transcribed for the harp since, and there are some ancient harp works, as I could call them, such as the Mozart Harp Concerto with flute.
Well, and let's see, J.C. Bach wrote a nice harp concerto that has God Save the King in the middle movement, and other slightly later 18th century composers, not necessarily Baroque, but Waldau has one.
Mm-hmm. And, correct.
And yeah. They're charming pieces, and these are full-fledged concertos.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And those weren't really written for the modern harp, like the harp that I'm looking at right now. There were harps that only had two functioning, or pedals that only did two functions, and there was actually for a time a triple strung harp where there were literally three rows of strings, and the harpist would have to reach between the two rows in order to grasp those middle strings. And if I remember correctly, there is also a harp model that was made two of everything in essence, so it looked like a giant X, the strings intertwined, and it was very complicated and didn't last for quite a long time. Yeah,
they did some, it seems to be the end of the 18th, early 19th century, that they did a lot of experiments with instruments that you would guess, well, I cannot believe that one would ever take off, and most of them didn't.
Yeah.
So when you look at some of this earlier harp repertory, do you have an advantage with your more modern instrument?
In a way, there's still a lot of music being written for the harp, and it's being sort of changed in a lot of different ways, like how the strings are plucked and different effects that you can get from touching different parts of the harp.
And even knocking the body of it, I suppose.
Yes, there's a piece that I, or several pieces that I've learned in my repertoire that involve knocking on the harp, or even like brushing the wire strings to make kind of a sweeping effect, or plucking the strings with your fingernails. It's very different.
Well, the plucking the strings with your fingernails, that sounds like you would have to perhaps grow into that part if you weren't already, fingernail enhanced. You'd have to, in other words, not just anybody could do that, probably.
It does take a little bit of practice. Well, most everything on the harp does.
I can imagine that. So there's a fair amount of contemporary 20th century harp literature then. It's almost as if it's been rediscovered.
Indeed. And just the vast array of colors that can be reached on the harp is very attractive to composers.
Well, one composer who seemed to be able to play any instrument and seems to have written for all of them was Paul Hindemith. So is this a piece that we have here an original harp sonata?
Yes, this is an original harp sonata. I've prepared the first and third movements, which it doesn't really involve the exotic effects that I was discussing earlier, but it is very atonal in parts, but at the same time very traditional. He wrote this piece shortly after he came here, after fleeing from Nazi Germany, and I think he was very struck by a lot of things in America and also some very traditional values. So this sonata, the first movement, is about walking through a church and seeing the different parts of a church. And the third movement is about a man's legacy after he died. And there's a poem that goes along with it about hanging the harp over his coffin or something kind of morbid like that. But regardless, it is a very contemporary piece.
So we'll hear the first and third movements of this Hindemith Sonata for Harp. First and third movements of Paul Hindemith's Harp Sonata, and a lot of techniques going on there. Now, one thing that a harpist has to do that I think most string players don't have to do is all that dampening.
Yes.
I mean, so that's one more thing you have to keep track of if you want the note not to be sustained too long. You clamp your hands on there to stop it. What other things were you having to do in that sonata?
Well, the very important part, I think, of the third movement is a lot of raising and letting, as weird as it sounds, it's almost how you picture the swing of your arms after you play the note that really makes the note. It's like a golfer, you know.
Follow through.
Yeah, exactly. You have to follow through. And if you don't follow through, your sound can come out very harsh, and that's a problem that I still struggle with. But that's one thing that I think violin players, for instance, they do have to somewhat picture, you know, the way their arms move off the strings, but on harp it is just so very critical, and also a bit has an aesthetic purpose, you know?
It's such an open
instrument too, you know, when you're performing it, because people all around you can see exactly what your hands are doing at any given moment.
That's true, and you have to sort of flow with the sound, don't you?
Yes.
Harpist, and she's brought her instrument here, the whole thing, which there's a whole different level of logistics that you have to put up with. Now, about this harp, it has, as I suppose you would expect, a kind of an antiquated look, and yet it's recent in
yes.
its construction?
This harp was built 5 years ago, almost six now, and the technology and the engineering and all the pedals and metal components of the harp, it's very, very modern, and even the smallest of mishaps, you know, with precision can alter a harp forever, and each harp in essence then is unique. I mean, extremely unique.
Do they have what would you say, vulnerabilities?
Yes, they certainly do. One of the greatest fears of any harpist is dropping their harp, which has happened to me once. But they are very weak instruments, I think, if you were going to put them up against other instruments of the orchestra, particularly brass ones, you know.
Yeah, right. Do you have to have it restrung occasionally?
Yes.
I mean, with new strings?
Yes.
That's got to be a project.
Most harpists restring their harps every 1 to 2 years, and it does take a few days, and, you know, the weather can't be too humid or, you know, weird outside, because then the entire tuning of the harp can be messed up.
Well, and if you travel, I suppose, then like many instruments, you have to spend some time letting it acclimate and retune.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, let's go back to the Baroque for something now, not necessarily written for the harp, but certainly adaptable for it. And this is one of the great harpists of the 20th century, Carlos Salcedo, actually did the adapting from whatever the original instrument, whether it was harpsichord or something else.
Salcedo was particularly known for his transcribing and also composing and just being a virtuoso harpist. He was the Renaissance man.
Well, this will take us from the Renaissance to the Baroque then, with a early 18th century composer by the name of Pichetti, and this is his sonata for harp, the second movement. Of a sonata by Pichetti. I'm guessing maybe originally for mandolin. It has that quality about it at times.
Yeah, it almost has an operatic quality to it too. Like you could imagine someone singing it.
Yes.
Obviously it wasn't written for that, but it definitely was a reflection of the time.
And now back to harpist Chloe Tula, who is, let's see, finishing up high school this year, right?
Correct.
And have you gotten the college choice figured out?
Yes, I do. I will be attending Rice University.
Rice University. And is that because there is a great harp teacher there, or are there other reasons?
That and just other reasons with the school. It's a fantastic university overall, and it balances the music and academic life.
Okay, well, and you start there in the fall?
Yes.
Now, so as a harpist, what sort of, to put it in slang terms, what kind of gigs do you get? I mean, it's not like a lot of instruments, you know. I mean, if you're a tuba player, you know, or a bassoonist even, you're not going to get invited to do weddings or various other, you know, luncheons and things. But is that part of your lifestyle?
Yes, I do do occasional wedding gigs and luncheons, meetings. I've even done baptisms and, of course, you know, funerals too. Those are pretty sad. But it is very interesting because each one is unique and the situation is unique, whether I'm playing indoors or outdoors, which has its mishaps. But
outdoors, oh, yes. Yeah. That's for what, like an outdoor wedding, you mean?
Yes. I remember one rather fondly of, I was playing on top of a hill and it was in May, so you'd think it'd be rather nice out, but it was 40 degrees and windy. So they were not going to move it indoors. They were rather insistent about that. And my hands were turning blue as I was playing.
One of those occupational hazards.
Right.
Well, fortunately, we don't have that issue today, at least not that I've noticed. Now, we mentioned Carlos Salcedo as being one of the great arrangers, but he was also a major harp composer for the 20th century.
Yes.
And this is a little night song that he's provided for the repertory. And is there anything particular that he's doing here to create the nocturnal effect?
Well, it's divided into three parts, very brief parts. But the first part is the man trying to fall asleep, so as the story goes. And then the second part is kind of a dance, or some people have interpreted it as like the factories at night working. And then the very end is as he slowly drifts to sleep in the city. Slumbers in the very early hours of the morning. And he uses a lot of different effects in this piece. He has the harpist playing closer to the soundboard, which makes it sound like a guitar, with the fingernails, you know, glissandos and plucking the strings. It's all very different. So,
okay, here we go. It's called Chanson dans la nuit. Harpists have to love those glissandos, right? Isn't that really kind of your bread and butter?
Yes, and this is certainly a kind of a parody of them at the end. You know, it's almost like cat claws going down the strings with your fingernails.
Well, we mentioned these arrangements for harp, and here is a composer we think of, this Argentinian composer, Astor Piazzolla, is doing most of his work with an instrument called the bandoneon. So would this be a transcription from that?
This would be a transcription from a tango group, so it would be more of an ensemble playing this.
And the transcriber is?
Maria Luisa Rayon Ferrero, and I actually had the opportunity to study with her this summer at Saratoga Springs, New York, at a workshop.
And this is Inverno Porteño. By the name of Etude No. 6. It comes from the Violin Sonata No. 2 of Bach, as arranged by Marcel Grangeny and played by Chloe Tula, who, let's see, you're from Delafield, but
yes.
You're going to be going down to Rice University in the fall.
Yes, in Houston.
Are there concertos, notwithstanding, are there really, really great orchestral parts for harps? I mean, things that, I've always wanted to play that.
Well, I think one standard thing that you hear every harpist play, it's like a cookie cutter orchestral audition piece. It's the Tchaikovsky Waltz of the Flowers cadenza.
Oh.
You know, I think every harpist can play that in their sleep, or at least, you know, thinks they can. It's a very standard piece, but also, I mean, Tchaikovsky wrote lovely things, Rimsky-Korsakov, and then you go into the French composers, Debussy, Ravel.
Oh, sure.
They were all big into the harp.
Well, it's been a great pleasure having you with me today, you and your harp both.
Thanks for having me.
Well, hope to hear more from you, and in the meantime, have a great time down there at Rice, showing them how it's done on the harp. Chloe Tula. Thanks to Brittany True and Tom Blaine, our engineers. Thanks also to Michelle Good and Stephanie Elkins and Gabrielle Pedriani. You're listening to WPR.